Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the Not Safe for Work Photography Podcast. Today, we're interviewing Darcy from Libido Ergo Sum Studio. Darcy is a veteran and former Army photojournalist out of Atlanta. Darcy is LES Studio on FetLife. How are you doing today, Darcy?
I am doing fantastic. It actually happens to be my birthday, so this is a really awesome birthday gift.
That is excellent. So I met Darcy on FetLife, and she wanted to talk about lighting. Now, lighting is probably the most important thing from the perspective of a photographer, so it's definitely an important subject. This episode will probably end up being a little more technical and dry than some other episodes, so we'll start off talking a little bit about Darcy's current erotic photography work, and everyone who's not interested in the technical part can listen up until that part, and then you guys can drop there. So, Darcy, how long have you been doing erotic photography?
Oh, goodness. I think the first time I shot anything that was erotic, it was mid to late 2013, I think. And that was many years after I started being a photographer. I started really shooting and bought my first camera in 2006 when I was on leave from Iraq.
So what made you want to pick up photography?
Oh, goodness. Back when I was a little kid, me and my brother were home one day because it had snowed, and mom and dad were off to work, and we were limited to PBS shows. And they were doing this special on a guy named Doc Edgerton. He was a professor of electrical engineering at MIT and an amateur photographer. And if you've ever seen the photos of the bullet going through a playing card or the bullet going through an apple, he was the guy that first did that, like way back in the 50s and 60s. And he designed a microphone trigger that would pick up the sound of the gunshot, and he could tune the delay so that he could get the bullet where he wanted it.
Yeah, I've definitely seen those pictures. I didn't know who did that. That's cool.
And it was like mainlining crack. I was addicted right off the bat.
So what made you want to take pictures of naked people?
I love the human form. I went to a performing arts high school, and I was around a lot of dancers. And that gave me an appreciation of the theme of women's bodies that were healthy, vivacious. And as I talked to my friends, a lot of whom are female, they gave me the sense that the images they saw in the media did not make them feel beautiful. And when I talked to them about wanting to do nude photography, erotic photography, they said, go for it. I think you have the talent for it, but please don't be that guy. And so I set about trying, leveraging my experience as a photojournalist to capture who these women are and how they feel confident in themselves being nude and erotic. So it was a bunch of different factors, and none of them completely make sense, but they're stuck in my mind and I'm just trucking along with it.
So to pull a thread from there, it sounds like you definitely have a consistent belief that runs through your work in terms of taking realistic erotic, or am I reading too much into it?
No, you're absolutely on point. I want the images to feel real, and posed to a certain degree because it's fetish photography, but I want them to feel authentic to who I am and my experience as a photographer and my experiences in life, but also consistent with someone that, the model that wants to be in front of the camera and wants to come out of their shell. This isn't about what it started as a prurient interest, but now I've seen the dynamic between the photographer and the model. And I want that to be part of, you know, something bigger. Waffles, the one of the models that I work with that got me into it really early on, and I've worked with many, many times. You'll see her as tag removed because she wound up getting a bunch of creepers. But I've worked with her, and she really helped me tailor that vision of bringing the women to life and bringing their desires to life.
Yeah, I definitely feel like an awful lot, and it's, I don't know how to phrase this, an awful lot of the models are kind of come in very standard body forms. And I think that it's been improved in the last couple of years for sure, as a lot more people have kind of, with, despite what you may or may not think of OnlyFans, it has encouraged a lot more people of varying body styles and, you know, looks and backgrounds to kind of get into doing adult work for sure.
I think OnlyFans is a fantastic entity. It fills a need both on the content creator side and on the consumer side, because you know, there are a lot of people out there that love women with fuller figures, and your quote unquote normal modeling sites simply aren't picking up on that and giving the public what it really wants. I think the explosion in trans porn has satisfied a huge market demand.
I know.
And that's not just... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I definitely know personally that when I'm looking at erotica, I very much prefer, like, you know, women that I feel like I could actually, you know, have a chance with in real life, not these ethereal creatures who, you know, have personal trainers and dietitians and people who, you know, chastise them if they're 5 pounds over.
Yeah. I mean, being, I could never be a model. It's an absolutely brutal existence, and I absolutely salute the people that can do it. I do this for fun, and it brings to mind an episode. I was working with Waffles and another model at Waffles' house, and we were doing a shower shoot, and they're both tiny women. Waffles is like 5'2", and the other woman was, I think, 4'9½". And that 1/2 inch is important. And I went to lay down to make them seem taller. And of course, the beautiful women, they're doing these wonderful things. And I had an erection, and I pile drove that sucker right into the tile floor. Mm. And, you know, I'm on the floor groaning, sputtering. And they asked me if I was all right. And as soon as they realized that I was mostly okay, that's when the laughter started, and we laughed about it for a good 20-30 minutes, because it's just so ridiculous. And it's a story that we tell a lot, because it's part of, you know, having fun is part of the fabric of the shoot. If we're not having fun, the shoot ends. And that's part of what I try and bring when I'm photographing these models.
All right. So you mentioned that you had spent some time doing photojournalism, working for the Army. How has that affected the type of erotic work you've done?
I actually don't know. There, being a photojournalism doesn't necessarily, or having been a photojournalist doesn't necessarily affect what I choose to photograph. It really affects more of how I direct the shoot, what poses do I go for. I mean, the standard, you know, model-ish poses and the shibari, they're fantastic. They're beautiful. They're not really my style. So I try and find something that the model wants, the poses that the models want. And sometimes I give ideas where it's like, hey, I have this idea. Let's see if this works. But it's the fact that I was a photojournalist really affects me in the fact that I either get it or I don't. I try not to shoot the same pose a bazillion times unless, you know, I'm too early or too late. Like with the ballet photos, you know, there's a certain point in the movement that I'm trying to capture. But outside of that, I either get it or I don't, and I move on. And because of that, that really affects how I light things, what kind of prep work I do, and so forth and so on.
Yeah, I can definitely see. I know that I've spoken with some photographers at some points that are very mechanistic about it. You know, they've got like the shot list and they're going to get the exact shot they want versus, you know, trying to capture what's going on in like the fleeting moment.
Especially, and this is especially true if I've got models that are interacting with each other. On FetLife, I see these gorgeous women in these fantastic situations and their faces tell me they're doing their taxes.
That sounds like the first time I went to a strip club. I was so happy and so excited until I looked at their faces as they were dancing. And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
This is a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they're interacting, I let them interact until there's a natural pause. And I just shoot and I shoot and I shoot. And then once that natural pause hits, then I gently interrupt. If they continue going, I let them because they're doing what they're enjoying. I'm just along for the ride and the pictures will be amazing because it will be as real as it gets.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that style of shooting for sure. Especially if you're going for that realism or a more real erotica for sure.
And since I'm not, you know, shooting at the pinnacle of models, these are real women with real lives, and I want their eroticism to be just as real and come across in the photos. Sometimes it's a little more fantastical. I think there's a couple of shots that I did, and they may not be on this profile, but on my personal profile, I was working with a young lady and she was just wearing a simple little black dress, had a nice deep black background, but I had put some reflective tape on her back and had illuminated that. So it looked like she had a cyber tattoo on her back. And sometimes I'll do stuff like that, but there's a black and white picture on my profile, on my LES profile, where she's sitting on a stool, and that's Waffles. She's sitting on a stool. She's got a glass of whiskey and it looks like she's pulling something out of her hair and she's just calm. And that was after a long day of work. We had just done professional headshots for her office and she wanted to do something fun. So we thought, well, let's, you know, take it easy. And I thought that shot would work and we went with it. And to me, it works. It's soft, it's intimate, and it's about as real as it gets. That's one of my favorites, working with her.
All right. I see that on your profile, you have some hard limits described. Do you have any interesting stories about why those hard limits are there?
Yeah. So one of my hard limits is working with littles. My first marriage was to a woman that had a pre-existing family. And she was psychologically abusive, very psychologically abusive. I've been to therapy, I don't know how many times, dealing with the PTSD. And children and childlike acts seem to be the triggers for that. And so I was going to a group shoot and I was contacted by a model and I saw that she was a little, so I was going to at least try and accommodate, but she wanted pictures of her and her daddy in a dynamic that I knew was going to just send me down a rabbit hole. And I said, no, I initially said, I really don't want to go there. That brings up some uncomfortable memories. And she pushed and I said, no. And she pushed again. And so I said, I'm terminating this exchange. We will not work together. And I blocked her. And ever since then, it's been a hard limit because the model was not respecting my limits. And that was absolutely going to be a no-go.
That's fair.
The other hard limit is anyone who says that their location is Antarctica.
I see. That seems like that's pretty common for some people.
Yep. And that's great if you're trying to hide your location. I absolutely understand. And that's not someone that I want to deal with because that is dishonesty. And if you're not willing to be honest, then I don't want to work with you.
Interesting.
That is, and that's the soldier in me talking. If you're not going to be upfront. Now, if you contact me and say, hey, my profile says this, I'm, you know, trying to hide my location. I'm in, you know, XYZ location. Okay. We can work together. But if you're not going to be forthcoming with the information, and you're trying to deliberately be dishonest about it, even for valid reasons, that's not where I'm at.
All right. I see also you have a Hago. I don't even know how you feel. That's how you pronounce it. I've seen it so many times. I've never actually heard it said.
I think it's a Hago. It's overdone. I don't think there's any artistry in it. And for the people that like it, hey, via con Dios.
Yeah.
For me, nope. And if I'm working with a model and she deliberately does it, that is the end of the shoot. Hard stop. I pack my gear and I'm out.
That's funny. That is very, yep. Yep.
Right. You know, my ex-wife was big about not respecting my boundaries. And now that I'm not in an abusive situation, I'm not going to put myself through that.
No, that makes sense. You have your boundaries and you got to enforce them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Also, since we're talking about your profile, I see you have some strong feelings on guys with camera. Would you like to elaborate on that here?
Yeah. Everybody starts somewhere. And I started as a guy with a camera. The big thing is, you got to progress beyond that. You're playing in a pool that has real consequences for real people. And especially if you're working with amateurs, they have day jobs. They have day jobs that may be sensitive to their employees making these kinds or creating this kind of content. And you have to bring a certain level of, I believe that you have to bring a certain level of professionalism when you're doing it. If you're there just to take nudies, just be honest about it. If you're using photography as an entryway to having sex with or having sex acts with a model, be honest about it. Because, you know, that can send somebody down a rabbit hole psychologically because, you know, especially the models, almost every working model that I've known has stories about a predatory photographer, and it can have real and serious consequences for the models. And that's not okay. Yeah. So I want to welcome the guys with cameras into the fold and elevate their game. It's not that I have anything against them because, like I said, everybody starts somewhere, but you gotta have, you know, that even though you're not getting paid, you got to have that professionalism.
And a couple of the models that I've spoken to, being, you know, of course, well aware of the GWC phenomena, they are fine with people that just, some of them are fine with people that just want to take nudie pictures. Somebody that I interviewed like 10 episodes ago at this point, she was saying, like, she said she saw it as being somewhat tangential to sex work, where she's not there in a lot. She's there sometimes to make art, and she appreciates that opportunity that she has with photographers where she's there to make art. But, you know, sometimes it's a guy with camera, and sometimes she's there to fulfill his fantasy in many ways, you know, within her boundaries and, you know, within kind of the negotiated boundaries there.
And I am 100% for that. I love sex workers. They're wonderful people. You know, the ones that I've met are wonderful people. Some of them enjoy what they do. Some of them stay doing what they do because it pays the bills. It pains me greatly that there is such a stigma against sex work. And as long as people are being honest, know where the left and right limits are, stay within the lines, 100% go with it.
I think it comes down. I think it comes down to what you were talking about, where it's about being honest. Like, mm-hmm. you're not lying to the models and being like, I'm going to get you in whatever. I'm a model agent or whatever. It's
yeah.
And I want to take pictures of a pretty girl.
And I am absolutely relentless when I see posts where I think someone is being dishonest. I call it out 100% of the time.
See the theme.
And that makes me an asshole. You know what? I've been called worse, and I'm 100% okay with that.
No, I'm definitely seeing the theme here, and what drives you and your boundaries. And honesty is a big one.
Yeah, that was something from my dad, and it's like, and mom reinforced it, you know, just as much. And so that, you know, that's my nod to them in this work. They don't necessarily agree with what I do on my free time, but they understand it fulfills a certain role, and it brings me a lot of happiness.
I don't think I could tell my parents about that. Actually, I could tell my dad about doing this kind of work. Don't think I could tell my mom. So let's get to lighting. One thing that I don't want to talk about is I don't want to talk about like specific lighting scenarios, like Rembrandt lighting or 3-point lighting, because you can find all kinds of YouTube videos on that and all kinds of stuff on that. So let's talk more kind of about getting started in lighting and lighting specifically around erotic. So why is lighting something that we should talk about at all?
Okay. So I'm going to go ultra abstract. The human body at its most basic is a three-dimensional object. It has form, it has volume, it has shape, and there's somebody attached to it. So a lot of the images that I've seen, and Playboy tends to be the most egregious offender, although there are others. You know, Playboy has a specific look. Their lighting is entirely too flat for my taste. Excuse me. If we're going to light a person, it serves a couple of different functions. Number one, we have to be able to see the object, and there has to be enough light to make the actual exposure. It sets the tone for the image. If you're in a dungeon, if you use really flat light, it doesn't make sense, because you've got, you know, a lot of time dungeons are dark and they're moody. So you need that kind of lighting to set the scene. And you're trying to show the shape of someone's body. We'll just take breasts, for instance. Breasts are awesome. But if they don't have shadow, it's very hard to tell, are they big? Are they small? Do they perk up and say hi? And you can do that with lighting. Now, as for my personal taste in lighting, I use everything from speed lights on up to studio strobes. I use soft boxes. My current favorite is an inverse parabolic, and I love it because I can get hard light.
What's an inverse parabolic?
So you've got the parabolic bowl, and the light fires into the modifier and then comes out. And usually the light is light is mounted on a rod so that you can focus the light so that you've got a really tight beam, or you can defocus it and get this beautiful wash of light. So think the Braun color para. I can't afford a Braun color para, so I wound up buying the Glow Profond from Adorama, and I absolutely love that. It is an absolute bastard to haul around and to use, but I put up with it because the light is just that fucking awesome.
All right, before we dive into that real quick though, because there's something I wanted to talk about on camera versus off camera lighting before we really deep dive into kind of the gear part.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I am, depending on the situation, I am 99% likely to use off camera flash. Now there was a shot that I did, like the one I was talking about earlier with the reflective tape.
Mm-hmm.
For that image to work, I have to have a light at the camera position because the tape will only reflect back to the source. So I can't light it from the side and have it come back to the camera because it always reflects back to the source. And I had seen some cyberpunky art and I was like, I really want to do that in a picture. How do I do that? And I was thinking about it. I'm like, reflectors, like bicycle reflectors. No, those don't work. They won't stick. Wait, they make tape like that. So I got on Amazon, bought some tape, and then I did it. I'm like, holy crap, this works.
And it's pretty cheap too.
Yeah. Don't get the 3M stuff because it's the way it's designed. You'll see an artifact pattern in the actual tape. The cheap off-brand stuff, beautiful. So I love off-camera flash because it allows me to control where the shadows are. And I actually think that the shadows are as important, if not more so, than the actual light.
That makes sense, especially if you think that Playboy style tends to be a little too flat.
Yep.
All right. So why did you choose off-camera flash versus LEDs or fluorescents or anything like that?
Power versus weight and cost. At the time I started, I bought a set of Policy Buff Einsteins.
Wow. Starting off expensive.
Yeah. At the time, I was debating between the Einsteins and some Pro Photo Kit.
Well, okay, yeah, there's expensive and there's expensive.
And the Einsteins gave me the most value for my dollar at the time, because this was before the explosion of the Chinese brands like Godox and its various rebrandings. So Policy Buff had the best quality of device, the best warranty, and the fact that their customer service was right here in the US. Yeah, I was all about that. And so I bought these three lights and some umbrellas and just started going with it. But it wasn't really until I read a book that was specifically about light that I really started to do the deep dive. And there's a book called Light, Science, and Magic.
I have that book.
That jumped my game forward leaps and bounds. I mean, it was literally night and day. And that's how I got into, actually, let me go back and finish answering the question because I started a rabbit trail. So what flash allows you to do, it allows you to control the light in your image. And the Einsteins had a nine-stop range. I could get like a quarter watt second all the way up to 640 and get pretty consistent color for about $500 a strobe. And that allows me to construct my vision versus what the camera thinks that I want. I got the controller, which had a built-in meter. I'm like, okay. And I got used to that meter. And when I switched over to the Godox, I was lost. I could not do anything in TTL. And then I finally bought a meter. And then I was like, okay, this is where I want to be.
So that's interesting. I started off with the LP 160s, like those manual flashes from 10 years ago or so.
Yeah, those are still great flashes.
Yeah, they're I actually just bought a couple $100 worth of LED lights during Prime Day. So I'm thinking about doing some video work and can't use flash for that.
Yeah, that is the only downside to flash is that it's not great for video work. But I'm still shooting on an ancient D3, so video is not in my video is not in the works.
I'm actually really impressed with some of these prices because that was one of the reason I was doing the LP160s and like the little those types of flashes because you could get those for about $120, and I was cheap.
my first really good speed light was the Flashpoint lithium ion zoom. I could shoot all day on that and still have battery power left over. It was crap for, you know, trying to overpower the sun or do high speed sync, but inside, oh, it was fantastic.
Are there any specifics to erotic and fetish photography that make you think that you really need to use one specific type of light over another?
That's a really good question. I don't think it's necessary to erotica to use a specific kind of light. It's more what are you trying, what is your creative vision? Because if you don't have a creative vision, then you're just snapping pictures and you're not likely to get something. I like to have a plan. It's like, okay, this is what I'm going for. If that plan completely falls apart, I'm okay. That's you know, part of my photojournalism. But I need to have a plan going in. And so I'll have ideas of, okay, this is what I kind of want to light. And then the models will either thumbs up or thumbs down. If it's thumbs down, hey, react to contact and continue mission. If they give it the green light, then we roll and react to contact from there. But it's, you know, if I was using LEDs, I think my style of shooting and how the workflow would progress would probably be different than using flash. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I had always kind of assumed that basically the LEDs and fluorescents were better for video and flash was better for still photography, just because the ability to kind of control the background light and control the, freeze the motion, even with a slower shutter speed.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Plus you don't have to crank up the ISO as high because even as powerful as the LEDs are, you're still not going to get, the same kind of light output, especially if you're spreading it through a softbox or an octa, you're not going to get that same kind of power that even a speed light will give you. Since I've only done stills, that drives the fact that I wanted to get into flash. For people that want to do video, it's a whole different ball game. And God's love you, man. because that's going to be a bitch.
Yeah, I'm diving into that now. I'm hoping to start doing interviews for the podcast in person and videotaping it for, you know, Patreon or something like that. And
okay.
I am going up the learning curve again.
Yeah.
We'll see. We will see. Maybe I should send back the lights and send back all that and just find a nice big window. Just not deal with it.
Actually, if for people getting started, I think a basic reflector is probably, and a light stand and maybe a grip arm to hold it out on, is probably the single best investment you can make, because you'll be able to use a good 5-in-1 reflector in a studio, on location, outside. They will always have value. So make sure you pick those up, you know, first. And I made that mistake, and I'm wishing that I had a reflector, because they are just that useful.
Yeah, definitely see those a lot, for sure. And videos like, you know, the models holding it kind of under their chin to fill in under their chin and under their nose, or like you said, put it up on a stand.
A trick that I learned from a guy named Seth Miranda is to put it on the floor and then fire a speed light into the reflector.
What's your overall philosophy of lighting? Do you prefer to overpower the natural light and get complete control, or are you looking to kind of take natural light and supplement it with a little bit here and a little bit there?
Neither, actually. My lighting philosophy is light without shadows is blindness. If there are no shadows to tell you what things are, if there's no contrast in an image, then you have nothing. So going back to, you know, showing the human form in a way that represents it as a three-dimensional object, the shadows are super important. Whether it's, you know, concealing the body and just hinting at breasts, hips, the butt. It's not necessarily in what you show, it's how you don't show. But you can't do that if there are no shadows. If you're just blasting the model with light, you know, head on, then it's going to be boring. Be different, experiment, take risks.
For a lot of new photographers, we kind of started talking about this a little bit ago. I imagine looking at the cost of like pro photo gear and, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a flash is kind of a real shocker. What would you recommend that, you know, new photographers do if they wanted to get into off-camera flash? What should they look at?
Okay. So to get into off-camera flash, you have to understand, or you have to ask yourself, what are your needs? What are your wants? And what's really cool to have? Also, you have to understand what your budget is. If you're trying to get in to off-camera flash and you've got $300, $400, $500, don't look at the big stuff. They're not designed for the amateur. Yes, they will be bulletproof. Yes, they have, you know, the best warranty. And, you know, people talk about, you know, light characteristics as if they're, you know, handed down from the gods. But if you can't, if you're not able to shell out $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 for a strobe, if you're, you know, or even more, if you're talking about like the Profoto Pro 11, which is a pack and head, I mean, that one tips the scales at 15,000 before you even actually get into a strobe. You have to understand what you're doing. And this was something that I had to learn the hard way, is that when you're working in somebody's bedroom, which is a lot of times where you're working, you don't have the space to really crank up the power. Mm-hmm. So you're wasting money getting power that you're not really going to use. Get a couple of good, reliable speed lights. The Flashpoint Lithium Ion Zoom by Adorama is a great starter flash. I mean, even though I've been shooting now for 8 years, I still reach for my speed lights on a regular basis. If you get stuff that will, you know, work and last, it's a good investment. And then I, you know, once I got away from the big Einsteins, when I went to the Godox speed lights, I got a couple of 24x24 pop-up soft boxes and a couple of adapter rings, a couple of light stands, and that worked. You know, get a small soft box with a grid so that you understand that you create pockets of light, pockets of interest, and you will be amazed at what kind of images you can do with speed lights. That picture of Waffles on the stool, the black and white, that was shot with speed lights, 100%.
You know, this is making me rethink, because I was rethinking doing all my lights, but my LP160s from 10 years ago still work. I got them out last December, and I haven't been shooting much because of COVID, at least not with flash.
Yep. And let's see what other ones. The picture of the girl with the burning roses and the leather bra. That was actually the
prom.
Yeah. Nope, not the prom. Hmm. It's right next to the biracial trans flag. Got kind of a 50s hairdo, black collar. Yeah, that was shot with a 200 watt second pocket flash by Godox in a cheap Fresnel modifier.
Huh.
And that's it. That's all it was. So you can create fantastic images and not require, you know, mountains and mountains of power. You just have to understand, what are you trying to do? What's your creative vision? I also use a program called Set a Light 3D. It is a 3D lighting simulator. So I can, you know, when I've got downtime and I'm just fucking around, I'll fire up that and just play with lighting setups to see what can I actually do with speed lights. And you can do a lot. You just have to think creatively and not say, I have to have 1,000 watt seconds of power in a strobe so that I can do the thing. No. And actually, that parabolic that I talked about, I find myself using my lower power lights more often, because it's just so efficient. I actually had I used the 200 watt second strobe or pocket flash in that, and at 7 feet, at 1/128th power, I could still get F4, and that was as low as it would go. So I think that's like 1.25 watt seconds, and which is next to no power, but in the right modifier, it's a lot of light.
Yeah. Especially I'm looking at these now, like a lot of these are coming with built-in wireless.
Yeah. And that
transmitters
is,
and
that is the value of the Godox lights. They have made leaps and bounds in their quality in the past few years. And I'm a little bit, I admit, when it comes to lighting, I'm a bit of a geardo. I love my gadgets, but a beginning kit. If you need the power, a 200 watt second, Godox 8200, a pop-up softbox and a light stand, the transmitter for your camera, and a Sekonic, I think 308 light meter, dude, you will run circles around people. And I love having a light meter because it's, I go in, that first shot is always the right exposure. And then I just go from there. I cannot say enough good things about light meters, especially if you're trying to, if you're working with someone that has darker skin. I did a shoot with a buddy of mine, non-fetish, really dark skin guy. He was a friend of mine from the military, and he was wearing a white karate gi. It is the absolute nightmare scenario. But using a light meter and setting everything in manual, first exposure was dead on the money. I think it was, well, maybe not. It was like a third of a stop off. And that was it. That was the only correction that I needed to do to make that exposure what I wanted. If I tried that in TTL, it would have been absolute nightmare. So understanding what your creative vision is, what kind of circumstances are you going to be working in, are probably the biggest things. And most people will need, you know, a 200 watt seconds at the most. If you're trying to fill a gigantic, you know, a 5 foot octa, you might need a little bit more. But I've used a speed light in my 31 by 47 softbox as a fill just to open up the shadows a little bit. Perfect.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially the parts about making sure to get the level of power you need. I've only shot with speed lights, but all my shoots have been inside and, you know, like living room or bedroom size spaces, and the speed light's been absolutely fine. What about shooting outside?
Shooting outside, you may be better off using natural light and a reflector. Because I've even run into situations where my 600 watt second strobe wasn't enough. If I'm trying to do high speed sync at, you know, and I had to make sure that the light was, you know, beyond a few feet from my subject. And that was actually the photo of the ballerina in the forest. I was basically at max power because I had to shoot high speed sync. And because of the way the trail was, I had to put the light about 10, 15 feet away. Mm. You know, they came out, but the exposure wasn't what I wanted. I wound up adding about a stop and a half in post-processing.
Gotcha. Yeah. How about bringing your lighting gear with you places? Personally, I've only ever shot kind of in my home. When I lived, I used to live in a place that had a really big basement, and I could just leave my light set up all the time. So I've never really had the joy and fun of trying to take my full system somewhere. How do you do it?
Well, nowadays, very gently. being in the military, I really, really, really fucked up my back. Mm. So you don't want to lug around a bunch of gear. You need to understand which battles are you willing to fight, which ones you're not, and don't think about just packing it in. Think about after you've been on location for 5, 6, 7 hours and you got to lug that shit back to your car. All right. Now to move my lights, depending on what I'm doing, if I think I need everything, I bought a rolling tool kit that I fill up with lighting gear. It's got big knobby wheels so that I can get it up over curbs, It's modular so that if there's something specific I need, I can get to it and then put it back. And it was a little expensive. I think it was a Husky set. It's a rolling tool chest. I actually got the idea from another photographer in the UK that I met on a Discord server. And I'm like, you know what? That sounds really good. Because previously I just put it in a backpack. If I'm just taking a couple of speed lights, I throw it in the backpack, I'm on my way.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to think hard about what light stands I bring, because I realized that I like having lights up high, and doing that with most aluminum light stands gets precarious. So I started investing mm-hmm. in C stands, and recently I got a junior stand, and they're fantastic. I love them. They're heavy as fuck. They are not that junior stand, as much as I love it, it is not designed for on-location use, but if you need it, you need it. So yeah. That's why I say, know what battles you need to fight.
I'm looking at that now too. I'm looking at some heavier stands and some booms. Cause if you start like swinging booms over stuff, you need to, weigh them down, and you need heavy duty stands. And cause I'm shooting with speed lights, I've been able to get by with basically super cheap aluminum stands.
One thing that I did learn to do were I bought a couple of donut weights by this audio company, and you can fill them with water. And once you fill them with water, they're about 25, 30 pounds a piece. But the great thing is, if you take them on location, once you're done, dump them out.
Yeah.
So you don't have to lug that weight back. That's a neat trick.
Yeah, one of my friends that does rucking, he does that with his weight for rucking. He fills it up with water, so that way if something happens and he needs to dump out the weight, he doesn't have to like drop a weight somewhere. He can just empty the bottles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you being an army veteran are like, why would you do that to your back on purpose?
No, some people have different kinks, and their masochism expresses itself in different ways. You know, if he wants to do that, God's bless him, but that ain't me.
All right. Well, we are unfortunately just about out of time, so I think we're actually over a bit. Let's go ahead and jump to the last question of the evening. What is your favorite photograph in your portfolio?
Oh, God. My favorite shot in my portfolio, bar none, is a shot that I took when I was in the Army. My brigade had been tasked with doing the flyover at Super Bowl 48 in 2014, Seahawks versus the Broncos, and it was being played at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, and we were coming in, and the national anthem was being sung, and we're coming in. And the fireworks, fired these red flares when she sung "The Rocket's Red Glare." And I was shooting out the front windshield of a CH-47 Chinook helicopter. And I captured the silhouette of an Apache and a Blackhawk set up against the stadium and the flares. That is my bar none favorite shot in my portfolio. If we limit it to my erotica, let's see. Here it is. It is a picture of a model lit from the side, and she is wearing a Monsignor's cassock, and she is giving the sign of the benediction. And to camera right, it's white light coming in. And then on her shadow side, there is this purple lighting. And her face is split down the middle. That is my favorite erotica photo.
Is that one on your Libido Ergo Sum studio?
Yes, it is. It from the top, it's not in the first section. It's in the second section, right underneath, or second line, all the way left.
Oh, I see it. All right, on my screen. Oh, I see the purple now. All right, yeah. When I was looking at the little one, I didn't see the. Also, it's after 8 o'clock, so my screen has now color shifted, so it's not showing any blue light. All right, yeah. That's really good.
And she was the first professional model that I worked with, or that I paid to work with. And the day or the week after, she went and shot a cover shoot for some magazine. She is the most wonderful person. I knew it was going to be a good shoot when I had made a geeky comment and her face just lit up. That was a great shoot. And I shot with her, even though I hired her, but it was within the context of a group shoot. And I had an absolute blast working with her. Dakota Sky, I found her on Model Mayhem. If you're looking for a model to work with, especially if you're trying to break out, she is a great model to work with. If you're trying to elevate your game, be respectful and she will make you shine.
It's good. It's good to know. I think my favorite is actually in the same section, one row down all the way on the right, the woman looking up at, I assume, somebody holding her leash.
Yep. That was taken just off the cuff during a photo session at Frolicon.
Frolicon.
It is an Atlanta-based kink convention. It's a lot of fun.
Right before Halloween this year.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. Well,
thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute blast talking to you.
Yeah, it's been super interesting. It's always fun to get in with another photographer and kind of discuss. It's one thing to talk with models, but it's another to talk with another photographer, for sure. So, Darcy, where can everyone find you online if they wanted to connect with you and see your portfolio?
Okay. Right now, I have an Instagram, but it's so completely neglected. So really, if you want to find my work, you can find me on FetLife at LES_studio. That is my sort of advanced hobbyist. If you want to actually see a broader selection of my work, you can still find me under my legal name at www.duncanbrennan.photo. And I've got on my portfolio, the first one you'll see is that picture of us coming into the Super Bowl. And there's a good number of shots that I've done for work, a few that I've done for funsies, and just generally knocking around with a camera. Nothing too spicy, but I've got some military photographs, some cosplay, some portraits, a couple of wedding shots that I've done, a little bit of boudoir, some landscapes.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that Super Bowl one. That is, yeah, just like capturing like the feel of the moment and just what it must have been exhilarating, just like cruising through the air to like sweep in.
I was terrified. I was terrified beyond belief because this assignment, out of all of the official photographers in the entire division at the 101st Airborne. They sent me. And basically their orders were, get the shot. Don't know what the shot is, but I'm supposed to get it. And up until that point, we were flying and there wasn't enough light to get a photo until the fireworks started going off. And I was just terrified.
Yeah, and I imagine on a helicopter as well, like the vibrations have got to be, the vibrations and motion and shooting at night.
I was shooting freehand, no monopod.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't know would a monopod have helped? I mean, with the helicopter vibrating so badly?
No, it would have, the vibrations would have been just transmitted right into the lens. Yeah. And we were constantly pitching up because the lady that was singing the national anthem that year was a trained opera singer. So she could just draw out the notes forever. And so we were constantly slowing down, which in a helicopter means that the nose is pitching up. Right. So I had to shock absorb through my knees and keep my camera on the level.
That's
both tilt wise and height, because since I was behind the pilots shooting through a tiny doorway, my margin of error was almost non-existent.
Makes sense.
But I pulled it off.
Yeah, no, that's somehow. Brilliant. All right. Do you have any ongoing projects you'd like to mention?
I do. I am working with a friend of mine who is a designer, and we are creating 4 sets of lingerie modeled after the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse.
Right.
So if the four horsewomen of the apocalypse were ladies, what would they be lounging around in before the end of existence? Huh. That was the concept of the shoot.
That would actually make a cool book. Like not just one shoot with them, but just like a whole... Anyway, sorry, distracted.
Yeah, originally it was supposed to be the 4 dresses of the apocalypse, but the idea was just too grand. It was going to cost me like $250,000 to see that specific vision through. But I have a friend that owns a Reconstruction era mansion that she runs as a bed and breakfast.
Nice.
So we can shoot there, and the lingerie shoot, that would be pretty cool. And I'm sure that we would do it over and over and over again to get all the shots that we want.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that is my upcoming project. And I'm also working with the same clothing designer to create pants for women that have functional pockets.
My wife complains about that. So she's gone completely into tights that have pockets, because they now make like workout pants that make pockets. Yep. She just wears that all the time because that's the only kind of pants she can get that have pockets.
Yep. So... That's everything.
All right. Well, and with that, we are done. Check us out at the NSFW Photography Podcast.com on Twitter is at NSFW Photography, Instagram at the NSFW Photography Podcast, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Keep making art, keep sharing art, and keep listening to my podcast.